But first, it's The Year That Made Me, and Hugh caught up with Arj Barker earlier this week.
The Year That Made Me.
Now, we do live in strange times in the world, but the upside is these are fertile times for anyone with a gift for making us laugh. Well, Arj Barker has been doing it for decades, the stand-up merchant who cut his teeth in the comedy clubs of San Francisco has become a regular here in Australia, and he's back, and we've grabbed him. Arj Barker, welcome to The Year That Made Me.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, thanks a lot.
What are you doing back here? What are you doing right now?
Oh, well, I'm on tour around the country with my show, We Need to Talk.
Sounds That's what ominous. I'm doing.
But I tend to, because of the distances involved, I just stay for, you know, I don't just pop over for a few weeks. I come over for months at a time.
All right, well, let me pitch you right into deep trouble. What's your favorite city?
Oh, I honestly can't. I don't really have a favorite city, but I will say that I'm basing myself in Melbourne. But this is this country. You can't pick favorites in this country because people are like they get pretty funny about that. They're pretty competitive. So the truth is, though, I tend to have a great time wherever I go. So,
oh, but, I mean, you are a politician. That was a politician's answer. And so your show is called We Need to Talk. What do we need to talk about?
Oh, it's sort of like me reaching out to my fellow humans and saying, hey, you know, what? Are we going in the right direction here with technology? And then there's really the central part, it's more of a personal responding to my personal life situation, you know, being newly married and that. And then the third chapter, sort of three chapters, the third chapter is sort of about my thoughts on how to raise children and stuff in this world, which is bizarre because I don't have children and I have no business giving anyone advice, but that's sort of part of where the fun is, I think.
Yeah. Some of the strongest advice on how to raise a family comes from people who will never raise a family. A big hat tip to Catholic priesthood in that regard.
But, that's true, yeah.
But you recently married and you don't mind getting a few laughs out of your recent marriage. So here's a little cut of some.
I wish I could tell you that getting married was the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me. But the truth is that my girlfriend and I lived together for just over 3 years before we got married. And I didn't know this at the time, but I did learn it. Marrying your partner that you already live with, that's like wrapping up your own bike and giving it to yourself for Christmas. Oh, what have I gone and done now? I really shouldn't have.
Now that reinforces something I've heard you say, that there's so much comedy right there in front of us in the simplest things. Is that an example of that?
Yeah, when you see a lot of comedians work, and I'm not specifically talking about myself, but you often will see them point something out and you think, bloody hell, that's hilarious, but I've known about this my whole life, but I've never looked at it quite like that. And they can be very mundane things. I mean, comedy is wide open for whatever anyone wants to talk about, really.
I've heard you say that you can't think of a good idea in comedy. An idea has to come to you. What's that process all about?
Oh, well, I just find that, you know, I can't sit down and say, okay, you know, here's a great joke. I wish I could. I mean, it'd make my life a lot easier. But the best I can say to you, even after doing it nearly 30 years, is that all I can do is try, and occasionally I'll come up with something okay by trying, but I think the real benefit of trying, as in sitting down and trying to, you know, write some material, is that it sort of predisposes you to think along the lines of jokes or looking for a bit. That's what we often refer to as a gag or a series of gags on a certain subject would be a bit, but it just sort of primes your brain, and then you go about your day. And I think you're much more likely to go, aha, now there's an idea right there. But it's because you put in the work earlier that you were sort of ready for it, even on a subconscious level. But I mean, that's all theoretical. I can't prove that.
When you do come up with an idea, are you ever sitting there and you think of a joke and it's just so funny that you laugh?
I wish I was that mirthful, but I don't. Yeah, I don't think so. I probably just maybe have a sly smile to myself like, uh-huh. Way to go, Barker, but that's just eternal.
Well, on the subject, where does Barker come from? Because it's not the name you were born with.
Yeah, it's a good question. I my legal last name, it's difficult for people to pronounce correctly. I just thought it's going to be like a whole life of correcting people and hearing it mispronounced, because it's pronounced Alec. It's an Indian name. And but people often say Akla. They for some reason reverse the letters, or all ack. Anyway, I didn't want to spend my life, since I was going into, you know, a form of public speaking, I thought, oh, Barker, you know, that's just Arch Barker. Boom, that'll roll off real easy.
One of the first comedians I've heard you say that you listened to, that you got drawn into, there was Monty Python, and there were the two Ronnies, and of course one of the Ronnies was Ronnie Barker.
Oh, yeah, Ronnie. That's true. And that may have been, I mean, I didn't intentionally think of that at the time, but it may have been subconscious, and I did watch the two Ronnies a little bit with my family growing up. But, but you know, who knows? I honestly just said, oh, Barker, huh, Arch Barker, let's give that a try. And then I just kind of stuck with it. And then I didn't really think much about it since then.
How do you make a decision to get up in front of a crowd where the only test of success or failure is if you get laughter? How do you get up the gumption to give that a crack?
Yeah, it was scary, actually. My friend Doug Canning, he's from California. You know, we were friends since high school. You know, he and I both had the reputation for being the sort of funny guys in our groups. We kind of ran in different circles. And at one point, late 80s or early 90s, he said, Arch, why don't you do comedy? You could do that. I don't know why he didn't do it. I mean, he always was a pretty funny guy too, but he got me kind of thinking about it. And then he said, yeah, I'll drive you to the city and we'll go do an open mic, or you'll do an open mic, I'll drive you. And the first week I chickened out because it was quite scary. And then the second week I said, all right, let's do it. And I was very nervous, actually. But it was instantly a thrill. And I would say I was instantly hooked just from the feeling of that. Although I want to say this, since we're going into it, I used to go to these summer camps with my family. They would have these skit nights. And I, at some point, wrote a monologue about the softball game that year because there had been some tension between some of the adult players. So I wrote this monologue basically satiring that. And when I look back, that was really my first stand-up because it was just me performing in front of a group of people and getting laughs. But I never thought of it as stand-up. But that would be actually my earliest set.
Your subject matter ranges over just about anything that's going. But a little bit of politics and sort of political satire in there. Here's a recent gag.
I mean, a lot of problems. People are worried about the environment. They say, global warming, climate change of the planet. And everybody's convinced that the Earth has a problem because it's hot. But how come nobody spends one second to consider the very realistic possibility that there's something wrong with the sun?
Now, I said that was a recent piece. In fact, it wasn't a recent piece. It's about 10 years old. But
10 years old. And also, it's funny that of all my jokes, that joke, it really worked. And I liked it for a long time. But then over time, I started to think, hang on, this is making me sound like a climate change denier, which I'm absolutely not. And so I probably, would never do that joke again, just on the small chance that at no point was I a climate change denier. It was just a gag. But then I actually got an email from someone who was a climate change denier and saying, right on, man. Right on. Like, no, wait, I'm not with you.
In fact, the payoff in that particular joke winds up to be one about burning toast. If I recall, so it moves on into a different space altogether. But how much do you think?
I claim that blaming the earth is like burning your toast and blaming the bread.
Yeah,
that was just meant to be a silly gag, but then I was afraid, you know, it would get politicized or something. But no one really cares, you know. Like, I worry too much about this stuff. It's a gag, and people know that. But anyway.
So, Arch Barker, what was the year that made you?
Oh, well, I chose 1997. I chose that year because that was the year I did my first Edinburgh, and that really went well for me. Unexpectedly, I scooped up an award that year called the Perrier Newcomer, which was, Perrier was, at the time, was a very prestigious award, and I didn't really expect for that to happen. But also, that year was a little bit, I mean, career-wise, things really heated up in that one year. I think I booked Letterman, and then right around just like Domino's, I got offered to perform on The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien. But I also got my heart broke twice, at least twice that year. So I just picked it because it was just an intense year, you know. It was a great year, but it was also, you know, I still can even remember the pain that I felt. They weren't long-term relationships, so they were like more like probably infatuations or severe crushes, I guess you could say. But that didn't quite turn out how I hoped. And I don't know, just a lot of ups and downs and emotions. And when I thought about that song, Paranoid Android, it's really got, you know, some real rocking parts, you know, where you almost want to, you know, yeah, you know, you feel excited. And then it's got such a sad, melancholy bridge in the middle. I mean, that, I remember flying back from that Edinburgh, I put down that song and just start like, you know, just started crying in my seat. And I was also in economy too, so that probably didn't help my mood.
It can happen that way. Well, here is the soundtrack to 1997, the year of great successes and great heartbreak, and the career of the heart is the one that counts, isn't it?
I don't want to overstate it. I mean, the kind of heartbreaks I'm talking about are the kind of things that we all go through or something. I don't want to make it sound like it was anything too traumatic, but for me, you know, it was a big year for me, a big year and a wonderful year.
Well, Arj Barker, we hope you have a wonderful year as you tour Australia again, and leave them laughing.
Oh, thanks.
And here's Radiohead, Paranoid Android.
This could you stop the noise? I'm trying to get somewhere. From all the unknown chicken voices in my head. What's there? What's there? When I am king, you will be first against the wall. With your opinion, which is of no consequence.
Paranoid Android by Radiohead, the song chosen by Hugh's guest today for The Year That Made Me, Arj Barker.